Welcome, everyone. This is Bill Blatchford. Tonight, our special guest is Dr. Carson Cooch from Albany, Oregon. Tonight, we're going in our Playing Your A Game, and of course, we came up with the title of these calls based on the first book that my wife and I wrote, Playing Your A Game. And during those series of calls, we interviewed the various people that the chapters were about. We have recently come out with a new book called Blatchford Blueprints. If you've not read that book, please make yourself make that available to yourself, and that's on our website. That book is $39, and it's a tremendous book. It actually includes a lot of information besides just about the doctors. We're getting great reviews on that book. Also, I want to mention that we have a Park City ski trip coming up February 25th to March 3rd. This photo was actually taken last year's trip. We had a number of doctors in Park City with us for the week. Mostly skiing, a little bit of seminar. Everyone gets a notebook. We meet for breakfast. We meet for lunch. We pretty much go our own ways at dinner, although we had a lot of great meetings over dinner as well. So that's Park City, February 25th to March the 3rd. All right, now let's get down to the business at hand tonight. Our guest tonight is Dr. Carson Cooch, Albany, Oregon. Carson's father has been a friend of mine for 30-some years. His father actually worked in my office while he was building an office in Corvallis, Oregon. Albany is a town 10 miles away from the town I practiced in for 20 years. Carson, are you there?
Yep.
All right, so why don't we start out. Carson, I'm going to have you start out, and if you could just kind of give us a background, a little background of where you went to dental school, how long ago you started, how you chose Albany as a place. I know you grew up in Albany, of course. Your father practices in Albany, in a separate practice. Tell us a little about your town. Tell us a little bit about what you were doing before you joined our program, and then I'll ask you some more questions as we go along. And for you people listening in, tonight we are using a new service. It's GoToWebinar, and of course, we have no background noise because you are all muted, and that works really well. The only problem is it's more difficult for you to ask questions. So there's a chat box, and I believe that you can raise your hand, and if you raise your hand, I believe that I can unmute you and I can take questions. And I believe you can also, there's a chat box there someplace that you can type in your questions. So Carson, why don't you start? Where'd you go to dental school, and when you got out of dental school, you came back to Albany. I believe you went to Marquette University.
Yep. So I went to Marquette University, and I graduated in 2005. And then I basically, at the time, was looking at either buying into a practice or trying to find an associateship. I didn't really want to jump into something all by myself at the beginning. That was kind of my plan at that point in time. And so I came back to Albany. Albany is in the Willamette Valley, kind of about an hour south of Portland, and it's about 40 to 45,000 people. It's primarily the grassy capital of the world, so it's a big farming community, and we have a lot of like metal industry, a lot of mills, paper mills, pretty much just a real solid kind of working class type town. And in fact, my grandparents were grassy farmers in this area, and so I wanted to be back. I wasn't really that concerned with coming to Albany in particular, just because it's not, it didn't really have all the glamour that I was thinking about when I was moving home. I kind of wanted to be in Corvallis, where you were at, which is kind of more of your college town, a little more exciting, it seemed like. So I came back.
I know you're a big Oregon State Beaver fan.
Yeah. So I didn't want to be too far away from Oregon State, actually. That was my ultimate goal. And so I came back, and my dad offered me an associateship one day a week, just to, that way I could kind of be under his wing a little bit and learn a lot from him. And then I found another associateship in Salem and worked for another gentleman up there for 3 days a week. So I kind of put a couple different associateships together, and then I would pick up some odd jobs from other dentists. I had a guy that had a family emergency, and I just wanted to work at a few different offices and kind of get an idea of how different people operated. And so I came back. I was doing that. I knew that I wanted to have my own practice, and so I just kind of started looking for practices. At the same time, I joined a study club that my dad was in with about probably 10 other dentists or so, and just sort of started trying to learn by being close to these guys and asking questions at our study club meetings and things like that. And actually having my dad ask Bill questions indirectly via email. And so finally I was actually going to buy a practice in Eugene, and there was a guy down there that was retiring, and it just seemed like a real solid practice. And he, you know, I looked back at like 7 or 8 years worth of his financial stuff, and he had been there for about 30 years, and it just seemed like a great deal. But I really wasn't that excited about going to Eugene, since that's the opposite of, that's like our arch rival, the Ducks, Oregon Ducks. But it was just a solid practice, so I was looking at that, and at the same time that I was ready to sign papers on that practice, another guy that I took over for, Ron Jones, he actually called me up out of the blue and told me that he was interested in retiring and wondered if I wanted to take a look at his practice and kind of see things there. So he practiced about maybe a rock's throw from my dad's office. It's literally on the kitty corner on the opposite side of the mall that we have in Albany. And so in 2005, I graduated. In 2006, then that next summer, I took over for Dr. Jones, I think the Monday following July 4th weekend.
Carson, what was that practice producing when you took it over?
It produced, the year before I took it over, it produced 480.
480.
So they were working, yeah, so when I took it over, they were doing 480. $40,000 a month. And they were working, I think, Monday through Thursday and every other Friday when I took it over.
Very good. And so I remember looking at that practice. I know your father had ran some numbers by me and that sort of thing before you bought it, as you said, indirectly by email. I actually was involved in that a little bit, but not much. All right, so you practiced there. You built that practice for about 2 years before we started to work together. What were you doing production-wise and days a week, that sort of thing, type of practice? Just give us a thumbnail of where that practice was when we started to work together.
When you started to work with me back in, up until when I started working with you, which was last April or May, we had increased, we were just kind of slowly increasing our new patient flow. We increased our production. So, I mean, we were building, but we had basically kind of hit a plateau.
I think you were around, 65 a month, somewhere in that vicinity?
I think we were maybe just a little bit more than that, but yeah, somewhere in that neighborhood. And so I think we might have been around 70, a little over 70.
Okay.
So we got to a little over 70, and we were hitting it pretty consistently. So we hit that. So we started around 40, and we kept making jumps, you know, as time went on. So we got to where we were consistently hitting 50, and then 60, and then 70. And then the time that it took me to get 270, we kind of just started to kind of curve off right there. And we were also, at that time, we were working, we were doing Monday through Thursday, and we were working about, like I told you, pretty much around 175 days a year, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a little less or a little more, depending upon trips and things. But so we kind of plateaued, and that's when I had listened to one of your lectures, and I talked to my dad. My dad's practiced in Albany for since about 1980, I think. And about 10 years ago, he started working 3 days a week. And so it kind of bothered me because I was building up my speed and I was growing my practice. And he was always out producing me working 3 days a week while I was working 4 days a week. And so the two things I had going on is that things kind of plateaued. And then also I was kind of wondering, like, how he was doing it in three when I was doing it in four, you know. And trying to figure out how to kind of copy his system, but his office is just so much different than mine. It's a much larger practice and they have different things going on. So that's when I met up. That's when I usually, I think, in March at the rendezvous meeting, and you kind of started to describe exactly what I was trying to get my practice to do, basically.
So just throwing a little side note here for those of you listening, Dr. Cooch's father, Kim Cooch, was a developer of the Arabrasion handpiece. He's also been quite an inventor in dentistry. Some of you may know him through the Caries Free program. He's always been involved in various things, and he and I have had lots of conversations over the years about how much time you need to work in the office, that sort of thing. And so Kim was trying to or Kim was doing this, Carson was trying to figure this out. We met actually at a minimally invasive dentistry society they put on every year in Baker City, Oregon. It's called the Mountain Man Rendezvous, where I spoke, and that's where I met Kim, or met Carson officially, and that's where you start thinking about working 3 days a week and starting to work with us. All right, so you came on board with us about April or May. The practice was doing around $800,000 a year, $70,000 or so a month, kind of plateaued at that level, 176 days. Now, how were you staffed at that time, Carson?
I had, actually, exactly at that time, I had two full-time assistants, I had 6 days of hygiene, so I had two hygienists that combined for 6 days within my 40 week. I had one full-time front office, and then I also had a kind of a part-time sterilization tech type person.
Okay, so you had about 5.5 people there.
Yeah.
Okay, very
good.
So
I had probably 6 people, really, I guess.
Okay, very good. Now, let's talk about what you've done since. You've had about 7 or 8 months with us. You've been averaging about $120,000 a month the last few months. How are you staffed to do that?
Well, what we did, so when we started working with you guys, we kind of, you know, tried to evaluate what was going on and who was doing what. And so we have 5 full-time staff, which is 2 hygienists, 2 assistants, and 1 front office. So we technically eliminated 2 positions, and then I ended up switching somebody that wasn't really on board with what we were doing in the hygiene department. And so and that was probably one of the hardest parts for me, was just changing some of the staff around. But I just needed 5 people that were on board with 100% and believed in what we were doing. So we made that change.
And one of the people you changed was a hygienist.
Yeah, so my employee that had been there the longest with the practice was one of the ones I had to change.
Mm-hmm. That's always
difficult. So that was hard. We still talk, so I don't think there's hard feelings. I think it just boiled down to a matter of what I wanted overall for the practice and the type of work schedule and things like that. That wasn't what she wanted, and so it's kind of
now
part of it.
Now you've gone to a 3-day work week, I believe.
Yep, so we switched starting in June. So we went to the Dynamo, you know, we went to the meeting with you, with my team, in May, and we just made the decision that, you know, we want to work a 3-day work week, so we just scheduled June on, we just scheduled 3 days a week. So we switched to 3, which
okay.
has been, without a doubt, you know, is so much more organized, and that's the reason that we're able to, I mean, absolutely the reason we're able to produce more, one of the reasons, is because we actually have time to take care of all the business stuff on Thursday. You know, Thursday morning we just kind of have a team meeting, and then we do some office stuff and helps us kind of coordinate and set goals and do stuff for the next week.
So what's working is the 3-day work week of absolute focus days, and then a half day of what we call preparation or buffer time, where you actually do your business things, your staff meetings, etc. I know you're doing quite a bit of networking in the community. You're doing quite a bit of that, and I believe you do that on Thursday. Tell us how you're able to produce that much dentistry. What have you put in place to be able to produce that much dentistry in 3 work days? I know you're working on your scheduling quite a bit.
Yep, scheduling is a big one. So before, our schedule was just basically a free-for-all. So just whatever things just got scheduled whenever anybody had a whim of wanting to do it in any sort of spot. So some days, you know, we might have a three or four thousand dollar day, and then we might have an $8,000 day, and that was pretty much our extremes. And so since we didn't have any sort of format to our schedule, I guess it wasn't very efficient. And then we'd have days where we were burned out, like on a Monday, and then we'd have days where we felt like we sat around and did nothing. So the thing that's worked a lot, I mean, scheduling is a huge one, our communication, getting everybody on board and having the same types of communication and everybody kind of knowing what the other person is talking about, having everybody kind of cross-trained, I guess, has helped significantly with finding out kind of what patients want and then trying to find the best time to do it. But then, you know, having a structure in place that our day kind of always looks the same. So when we get done, we're out of there on time, it's, you know, we try to always, like, I kick them out at 5:15, so we try to have our PM huddle at about 5:05.
Okay, let's talk about the scheduling. You learned block scheduling at the Dynamo. How long did it take to actually implement that?
We basically put it into play once we got back from that. So it took, but to keep consistent about it, because, you know, sometimes we would get a little freaked out when we didn't have something scheduled the next morning, and we had a big opening in my schedule, we'd be worried that it wasn't going to get filled. And knock on wood, it's like it seems like something always gets put into that spot, and usually it's big tickets. Like somebody breaks a tooth overnight, or we do an implant, or we do a crown. It's not usually like somebody calls at the last minute wanting to do like two small plans that they could do anytime. So it took us probably a good couple months to really get that into place, but we also had a lot of time off in there, so that kind of, so I got married at the same time.
Well, you got married about that time, I believe. Went to Europe on a honeymoon, and so during that period of time, I know your team members were calling myself, they were calling your consultant, they were calling Kay, putting some things in place. So it really took about 2 months to get the block booking in place. Let's talk a little bit about your communication skills you learned at the Dynamo. What did you learn that made a difference? Because you've picked up your production quite a bit. Now, you've also worked on marketing. We'll leave that for right now. But what did you do with the communication skills, and how did your team members react to that? How did they implement that?
Well, one of the biggest things was just finding out, you know, it never really even occurred to me to find out what people wanted when they were coming in for their treatment. And so I was, you know, guilty of just doing one crown at a time, because I just assumed that people would want to do one crown and one appointment and not do a lot more than that. And so one of the biggest parts of it was actually just asking people what they want. And we were absolutely blown away at how much dental work they wanted to do versus how much I would have just scheduled. Like I might have scheduled two or three things, but in reality, a lot of people wanted to just get it all done and be done with it. So communication, the biggest thing communication-wise was just getting us to shut our mouths and listen to what people actually wanted and to ask the right questions, and then using that to develop a treatment plan that was centered on their overall goals.
And how's your team doing with that, with those questions?
They do better than I do. So I've become the person that goes in and nods my head and meet and greet. I'm the meeter and greeter, and, you know, and take the pictures. I help take some photographs, and I just kind of do the more of the fluff and then treatment plan, and then they kind of take everything home. So they know every little detail about the patient, you know, that this person just moved up from Eugene and that their husband's coming in next week and they like to fish or they like to do this or that, and they don't care about, you know, the least important thing to them is having this done, but they really want to have this done. And, you know, so I treatment plan what I would do, and then the assistant works with them, and that allows me to get out of the operatory then and do something else, and that allows the assistant then, if it takes 15 minutes, it takes 15 minutes. If that takes an hour and 15 minutes, it takes an hour and 15 minutes. And they can spend as much time as they want working on that kind of stuff.
So you're pretty flexible with the time that your staff spend, your team members spend with each patient. There's not a, it's not that regimented.
No. We just see where it takes us.
So basically what's going on at this point is your team is really basically presenting the treatment and finding out the commitment level of the patient, finding out what they want, finding out their commitment level, and then talking financial arrangements, and then you're working up a treatment plan after the patient decided they want to proceed.
Yep. So
now that's really backwards and different from what we've been taught in the past, of course, because most of us learn to go in and do a complete examination, figure out what the patient needs, and then try and educate them into submission. So it doesn't sound like you're following that old pattern at all. It sounds like you've completely switched to letting the team find out what the patient wants and then working up a treatment plan to develop the best treatment plan available to accomplish what they want.
Yeah. I used to sit and have the patients look at a photograph of every single tooth in their mouth. And now the pictures are kind of in the background on the screen in the operatory. And sometimes they go through those pictures, and sometimes they don't. And we realized that those were more or less those were relevant for the patients that wanted to see him, and they were a complete waste of time with other people. And in general, our overall treatment planning has gone way up.
So it sounds like what you've learned, and if we could make a point here, is that one of the things that we teach is that you have to be flexible in the way you present the treatment. You have to be flexible in how much information you give, because some people, as you say, are very interested and some are not. And I think for years what we've done in dentistry is we've made everyone jump through the same hoops no matter what their interest level is.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that's working. Communication skills, you've mentioned cross-training of the team, you've mentioned scheduling. Now, I know you're doing a lot of work in marketing. What is your, roughly, what are you getting for new patients a month?
I would say we probably average around 30.
About 30 new patients a month, and I know you do, your whole team is doing quite a bit of networking. I know you're involved with the Chamber of Commerce. What else are you doing marketing-wise? What other networking things are you doing, and what media things are you doing?
So I do a lot online. We're working on that right now as far as developing our website and doing our search engine optimization. We do, you know, the networking in the community. We basically do stuff with the Chamber, and then we also are part of another business group. I pretty much try to shop and live my life locally so that people understand that I'm not their businesses as well, and that I'm trying to support them. And I've actually got a lot of, I try to find new, I try to find new businesses. I like to talk to people anyway, so I go out and if I'm at a restaurant or if I'm at a, you know, Home Depot, I just tend to meet people.
And I know that you're, for example, the person doing your search engine optimization, you said, was a patient, and he's a great referral source for you. So you're looking for referral sources in the community all the time.
Absolutely.
You're not the invisible dentist.
No. In fact, we're just updating all of our signs. That way we're kind of invisible right now, which as far as our location goes.
Yeah. I know one of the recommendations we made to Carson was he put in a time and temperature sign. Those really get attention. Now, you do some direct mail. You're doing a lot of direct mail as well, and that's producing patients for you.
Yeah. We do direct mail. That's part of it, too. I don't know how much is a lot or a little bit. We send out, we're just consistent, and we send out once a month, we send out some direct mailers, and we get a pretty good response from that, too.
Mm-hmm. For the people listening in, about how many mailers are you sending out on a monthly basis?
I have no idea. I don't do any of it. It's all done with a different company, but if I was going to guess, I think maybe 5,000 or 6,000 of them.
Yeah, I was going to say about 5,000 a month, I think, is the figure you shared with me at one time.
Okay. Very good. It changes, yeah.
All right, let's talk about your new schedule.
I was going to say another thing that we focus on is, you know, if we get somebody that comes in that is kind of a raving fan type patient, like a new patient, we definitely try to tap into that, because they tend to be the people that are real excited about referring other people. So
excellent.
Sending out cards, you know, like we send out every day at our PM huddle. I'll write 2 cards sometime during the day to 2 patients that we see during the day. And then everybody at the end of the day signs that card, and we just send it out. We try to pick people that we know like that kind of stuff and like to be reminded that we love them and that they love us too.
Excellent. Excellent. It's something I did all the time I was practicing, and it absolutely works. Tell us about your new schedule. You're working 3 days a week. Tell us this about your schedule. Besides the weekly, what does the year look like?
So we work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday is our primary clinic days. We take off 6 or 7 weeks we have planned for this next year. I like to take 8 weeks off total, but we scheduled maybe 6 of them, and then that way we have some flexibility to add stuff in there along the way. So we just work 3 days a week, and then Thursday, you know, becomes our kind of, sometimes we'll treat family on that day, or we have a couple of trades with some restaurants in town that I take my staff and I eat together probably at least once a week, sometimes twice a week on that Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And if I can't make it, a lot of times I'm the one that can't make it, but they definitely eat together at least twice a week. So we treat people like that on Thursdays. A lot of times Thursday is I'll go visit with other friends, or go to the Chamber of Commerce or get a massage or just do whatever. And then Friday...
Excellent.
Fridays either take off and do something else, or if I'm going to volunteer, then I volunteer on Fridays.
Mm-hmm. Now, we talked earlier, I know we talked about your net. You thought your net had gone up somewhere around $100,000 this year. Is that a fair guess?
Easy, yeah.
So somewhere around $100,000.
Yeah.
Increase in the net. Well, now I know you're going to have trouble not getting or keeping your schedule down to 8 weeks, because I think when you took your honeymoon, you were gone for at least 2 weeks at that time.
Yeah, we've taken, since June, we took off 3 weeks in July, a week in August, 2 weeks in September.
Okay.
So we took off a lot of, it wasn't necessarily planned like that. Next year, we're taking off, we're kind of spreading it out. We're taking off a lot more. We're taking off pretty much all 1 week at a time, or 1 week at a time, and then we may add a second week on one of those.
Okay. Now, tell us a little bit about how you went from staff, and I was reading an article in a magazine yesterday, and somebody is using our terminology that staff's an infection. I hadn't seen that before until we wrote an article on it, but I saw another writer using that. Tell us some of the changes that you made. Because I know some of the people you have are the same ones you had when we started, but they've definitely gone from what we used to call a staff to a team. Tell us some of the changes that took place and how that's effective.
That's a hard one to answer.
Okay.
I don't know. Most of the only person that, because kind of what I did is I went and listened to you, and I happened to be with one of my team members. And so Stephanie had come along with us to the rendezvous, to the dental meeting. And so she and I both heard the information at the same time. And during that meeting, I just told her, I was like, I have to do this. Like, I want to, do this. I want to work 3 days a week. I want to do these sort of things. And so I think, and she was on board at the same time. So we both came back to the office, and we had this, we had the Blatchford infection. And we wanted to, we were ready to change right that minute. And so we kind of blew the rest of the team out of the water a little bit. But at that point in time, I think what happened is that since we were working a lot with new patients, we were starting to develop and implement some of the things we had learned from you. And I think the other people on the team recognized pretty easy at how much that was affecting. Like, it just changed the way patients were treatment planning. It changed the, how happy they were with what they were doing. Like, both she and I were happier, and the patients were happier. And so... as we kind of went farther in the process, I think they got more and more excited, and we started to, I just started to educate them on kind of what I wanted to do, and then I just let them make a decision. I just said, hey, so at some point along the way, we just drew a line in the sand, and we said, okay, this is what we're doing. Either you come along for the journey and you're doing this, or, this isn't what you're doing. And so I kind of gave them all the benefit of the doubt, and I don't know that this, I wouldn't say this was the best decision, but I gave them all the benefit of the doubt, took them all to Chicago to the Dynamo meeting, and then once I got back, it was pretty evident that there was just one person that just didn't, overall just wasn't going to be happy going that route. And so that was the person that we eliminated from the team. And I think everybody I think once we came back from the Dynamo, I think everybody got to hear the same things and felt like they were all on the same page. And I don't know, it was just kind of an evolution. It just kind of happened because two of us caught on to what we wanted to do, and then to the third person.
Now I know they're bonusing now.
Yeah, so they're all bonusing. So they didn't bonus. So part of it is that, they certainly are getting paid more for working fewer days.
Typically, what do they bonus each person on a monthly basis?
They easily bonus $1,000, but I think they bonus maybe $1,000, $1,200, $1,400, somewhere in that range, I would say.
And that's each person?
Each, yeah.
And for those of you listening in, I can tell you that Carson's staff overhead still is at 20% or below. Carson, there are a couple questions here. Is your practice insurance based? Are you a preferred provider for anybody?
I'm a preferred provider for a company called ODS, which is basically like Kaiser, I think.
Delta.
And then, I was a preferred provider for Blue Cross Blue Shield, but we didn't really have enough patients that were actually on that PPO, so we ended up dropping it.
One of the things that we do with clients is we study to find out how much of your income comes from each of these preferred provider organizations. And in Carson's case, Albany is very heavily with Oregon Dental Service, which is a Delta provider, and he is a Delta provider. Somebody asked, where are your fees positioned? Why don't you just tell us, what do you charge for a crown fee? That would probably be a way to answer that question. And how does that stack up with other doctors in Albany?
We charge about $1,000 for a crown, and I think my dad's fee is right around the same. I think that's, I would say, is probably somewhere in the neighborhood. I would imagine if it was lower, it's probably, apart from, big conglomerate type, like Affordable Dentals and things like that, I would imagine that they're all probably around $900 to $1,000.
I think that's about average in Albany for the private practices. Somebody also asked a question, how long did it take before you got your team on board after attending the seminar? I think you answered that question. Once you came home from the first seminar, they were on board.
Yeah, once we got home from the seminar, everybody, they knew the plan. I mean, they know they had, I gave them an incentive, which was our bonus system. And so they had a goal. We had our goals laid out. We had a plan. We had our battle plan, basically. So the problem was that we did have that one person that wasn't on board. And literally it was more my team that kind of, squeezed them out. Because they didn't want to suffer just because one person wasn't, happy about doing that, doing what we were doing.
So the team starts to become critical of somebody who's not on board.
Oh, yeah. They were basically the ones that kind of interviewed the new person that we hired. And within a few weeks, they gave me the thumbs up and said, hey, let's go with her.
Uh-huh. Okay, Carson, two things. If you could name two things that you've done to increase your efficiency and your production. You may have already mentioned them. This is kind of review. Two things that you've done that you would say, if somebody said, okay, two things you've done, what would they be?
I'd say communication. I'd say number one would be communication. Is significantly better, and number two would be effective scheduling.
Okay.
So knowing
when you mean communication, I think you're referring to sales skills.
Yeah.
Communications with the patient.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the block booking. What would you say the value of coaching has been to you? I mean, a lot of these things that we've talked about tonight, you already knew, and a lot of people on the phone call know these things as well. What would you say, what's the result of coaching? Why did coaching work for you?
Because I didn't know how to get from where I was to where I'm at, number one. So I wouldn't be where I'm at right now if it wasn't for going through this and setting goals and having somebody that was, keeping me accountable to kind of what we were wanting to do. And so being able to have somebody sit down with me and lay out, and we just, we went to your house in Sun River and just laid out kind of exactly where I wanted my practice to go. And then we just started making changes that moved us that direction. So I wouldn't be where I'm at if it wasn't for having direction and for having somebody constantly keeping me accountable, to the point of having, another person come into our office and just making sure that we were doing what we were supposed to be doing. So all those things that I was paying for, somebody was actively keeping things in check and making sure that I was moving in the right direction. So
I think one of the things that, go ahead, I didn't interrupt.
And the biggest value for me is just having more freedom, like more time, having Thursday to take care of stuff at the practice if I need it. It doesn't, then I still have a 3-day weekend. Or most of the time, just using it to socialize and go visit. And I use that as kind of my own personal marketing day. Like I go to other places and go do other things and have fun and visit friends and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that happens is we all hit, regardless of what skill we're working on, we hit what I call the ceiling of complexity. And we do everything we know how to do, but we plateau and we level off at a certain place, and it doesn't matter whether it's a skill like skiing powder or a golf swing or running a dental practice. We all hit that ceiling of complexity, and someone else can come in and take a look at that and push you right through it. So I figured out for some of you wondered what the cost is Carson, you paid for the program, and of course you've raised your net $100,000, but what we figure the cost of this program is, if you're in our, we have a three-tiered program at this point. We have one tier for brand new practices that's one level, one cost. We have a medium price, a medium production for doctors doing between $500 and $800. Then we have our tier three, which is our top level that we work with, and Carson is in the top level based on production. And we figure that is worth just a little bit more than a dental assistant. We figure it's about a $17 an hour dental assistant is what this program costs for people doing it. We've already covered with Carson what his return on investment was. It's been about 3-1 for him just from a monetary point of view, plus he's had all this time off. And so that's really what the return is. You know, I think the question is, and one of the things that I have to say about Carson and working with him, he is a proactive kind of a person. When I give him assignments to do, and I have a monthly phone call with all my clients, and I give Carson some homework to do, and we talk the next month, it's done. And some of those things have been difficult, especially that assignment or that change that he had to make in his hygiene department. It's like, okay, I'll do it. And by the time you talk to him the next time, it's absolutely done. And one of the things that I see with many dentists and people running businesses, we tend to know what we like to do, or have to do rather, but we procrastinate on those. And Carson is not a procrastinator. I mean, that is the, if I could say two things about Carson that have made this program go, he's proactive and he's enthusiastic. Also, people that are able to make decisions, and if you need to ask a spouse, which I think is a great idea, your accountant or your team. And I think one of the things that I say is you make the decision and then let people go. I've never seen I very seldom see a team that wants to bring in a consultant or a coach. They're just satisfied doing things the way they are. And as far as asking your accountant, remember, you've had the same accountant for a number of years and you have not made the changes. And so I guess the question is, why would your accountant be involved? Now, your spouse should be involved in a decision like this, because whether your spouse works in the office or not, and Carson's spouse does not work in the office at all. As a matter of fact, she's a student, a full-time student at this time. So whether your spouse is involved or not, your spouse probably should be consulted in this. And I think one of the things to do is not look at it as an expense, but rather an investment in the practice that's going to return a good return. Go ahead.
Actually, one of the things that I was thinking about when I was sitting there listening to the first time I ever listened to one of your lectures, I actually, in my head, I was happy if all I could have done was just made the same amount of money and worked 3 days a week. I decided in my head that I would be happy if I could do that. I had no idea that I'd make money working 3 days a week.
Excellent. Well, that's right. I think that's one of the,
my expectations,
one of the things you do here is you figure out what you want. Carson, how long have you known you wanted to raise your income, or how long have you known that you wanted more time off?
Well, I mean, as far as my income goes, you know, I don't know. I'm happy to make as much as I can possibly make, whether it's being a dentist or whether it's being a dentist. I mean, I work for other dental companies if I can and get to travel sometimes doing that. So I like making money. I mean, there's no doubt about that. So there's no limit to that. As far as time off, I've kind of found that if I take too much time off, I feel like I get I don't get as much time to exercise. I get kind of too much out of my routine. So I need about 8 or 9 weeks off. And right at this time, if I have more than that, you know, sometimes I just get kind of bored. I'm a busybody.
Okay. Okay. Question for all of you on the call. Will 2010 be a banner year for you? Now, we've had what I can find out. I read the Wall Street Journal. I read Fortune, Forbes, several financial blogs on a daily basis. And one of the things that I'm seeing is that we may not see a real turnaround in this economic situation until late in 2010. That seems what a lot of economists are predicting. Now, one of the things I'd like to say is that clients like Carson, while they have, I mean, Albany is a blue-collar as blue-collar comes, and yet during this period of time of economic difficulty. And if he mentioned early on, it's a grass seed capital of the world, and the grass seed farmers are absolutely dead in the water right now because of the building trade. These are the people that raise the grass seed to make lawns, make golf courses. And Carson mentioned that his grandparents were grass seed farmers, and my great-grandparents were grass seed farmers in that same area. But right now, that Albany is suffering as much as any place in the country. And yet, he's had a banner year, so will 2010 be a banner year for you? So, what is next for each one of you is really the question. And one of the things that we have for all of you for listening in tonight, we do have we are recording this call, and we have this business principles that will work in any economy. And I see I'm on automatic advance here. But if you'll go to this website, blatchford.com/infusionsoft/freecd.bhp, PHB, we will send you the free CD of this call. Carson, I want to thank you for your time tonight. I know it's about dinner time for you. You've had a long day. I want to thank everybody that's been on this call tonight. And if you're interested in our program, what we do, you can contact us by going to this website, and we will send you this free CD. Well, also, you can download the recording of this meeting. If you'd like to contact us, you know how to contact us. There are the two websites, and there's our office phone number. So thank you very much for being on the call, Carson, and I'll tell you, it's a pleasure working with you.
Yep, thank you.